Okay, let's see. Can everyone hear me? Hopefully I don't end up exploding. Awesome. Great. So I will say I definitely needed the prayer because this isn't my usual platform. So I'm not used to, so I apologize in advance if I end up going on a weird tangent or rant. That's inevitable. But so today I wanted to speak, mostly it's weird hearing my voice, sorry, but I talked to Daniel like 2 months ago about how I wanted to share on Valentine's Day because I've had kind of a interesting last year. So if you don't know anything about me, my name's Nick, and I got married, well, in about a month to the day. It'll be a year. So right before quarantine in the world kind of in a due to COVID. So, and I've been going on this like journey of figuring out what marriage looks like and what love looks like. So I wanted to just go ahead. So we all have the classic 1 Corinthians 13:4-5. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, and it keeps no records of wrong. So that verse to me has always been interesting because I just love how it has two things that love is, and then it makes really specific, this is what love is not, because it's like they knew right out the gate that they were like, okay, you're going to think this is love, but it's not. So I've been kind of going on this journey figuring out what I thought marriage was, and more specifically, what I thought love was. So I'm going to take you back to the start of, I guess, my understanding of marriage. So the first thing is I had my parents. So they are a complicated story. So my parents, well, it's hard to explain. So I come from a quote-unquote broken household, which I never liked that term, but I have divorced parents. Actually, they got divorced twice, which is a whole thing. So if you've never had a divorce, gone through a divorce, or had parents that got divorced, it's always weird to explain to someone. But pretty much, there's like your fairy tale example of what marriage is. And then when you experience a divorce, it kind of breaks the facade. So for mine, it was 9. I was like, oh, relationship's in. But then they got back together. So I was like, oh, that was just a quirk. And then they got divorced again. And I was like, oh, okay, they do end. So that's a lot of the stuff coming forward. I'm going to mostly be pulling from things I observed in my parents' marriage. And then the other big example I had of what a marriage looks like is in my sister's marriage. So it's kind of weird because like I had a whole, the ending of a relationship with my parents that I got to observe. And then I got to observe my sister's whole relationship because my first memory is like her eventual husband showing up with a big screen TV. And then they've been together ever since. So I kind of broke down and analyzed that. So those are the two things I'm drawing on as my experience, quote-unquote, of marriage, which I immediately realized when I got married to my wonderful, beautiful wife, Katie, that I knew absolutely nothing and was in for a lot of work. So I think in the world, we tend to think, and I think it's mostly from media, that relationships work like this. Falling in love is the hard part, then you live happily ever after. And I think I've come to realize falling in love is easy. Holding a marriage together is hard. Sustaining love is the difficult part. So that's kind of where I am to now. And now I'm going to walk you through the journey of things I've discovered in the last year about what love is and isn't to me. Okay, so first I want to read 1 John 4-8. Sorry. Whoever does not love does not know God because God is love. So I've been kind of reevaluating all of my relationships in this journey of marriage. So I first wanted to start out figuring out how I love God, because I'm really good at accepting love from God, but I don't ever, I think, actually adamantly love God myself. So I had to go back to the basics and feel like, okay, before I can figure out how to love another person, I need to go back and figure out how to love God. So I was kind of going through a journey, so if we can go forward, of I wanted to figure out what love isn't. So we can go ahead and go to the next slide, sorry. So the first thing I was like, okay, love is not transactional. And I think this was a big point in my parents' marriage where eventually when you get so far into a relationship, you're in this point of obligation and it's no longer about the substance of what love is. And it becomes, I did this, so you do that. And it becomes a give and take type thing in the sense of we get to the point, the thing my dad said that always reiterates with me is he got to the point where he thought he earned love. Like, I've done enough, so now I should just be loved and I don't have any say, just that's what I've earned in my life. But I think I've come to the conclusion that love is not I do something and get something. It's you can only give and you can't input another person's feelings. So you can give love, but you can't expect love in a weird way. Love is not self-serving, which weirdly enough, I like to think I'm a selfless person, but apparently I'm not. I'm kind of selfish. just natural tendency. So a big thing that I've been learning in this road is that being selfish is a lot easier, but also is simpler than you think. I think we think selfish is just being like, oh, someone's doing something to me, so I have to do it. But it's gotten to the point where I'm like, oh, just like common things, like I don't like driving, so I always make Kitty drive. And I'm like, you know, maybe those small things add up to me being a very selfish husband. So I've been trying to reevaluate and recenter my motivations. It is not opinionated. So originally when I was doing this whole thing, I wanted to go on a whole tangent about our current climate and politics. Not going there, thankfully. But I think a lot of times when we go into things, we like to believe that our narrative and perspective is the right one. But if you actually want to love someone, you have to accept that there are dueling perspectives, and both are just as adequate and important. And you have to kind of just let yours go on the back burner sometimes and be like, you know, sometimes being right is not worth it in the end. Another big one I have is love doesn't just go away. And I think this was a big struggle for me because, like, the whole concept of my parents just falling out of love never sat right with me. And even analyzing them now, I think we like to think that, oh, eventually you just fall out of love. But I think love is a choice every day. And I think you have to make the choice to stop loving someone as well. So I don't think it just fades away in the background without action. I think it's a series of choices for love to go away. Love is not silent. And I love talking all the time. That's a thing I do. And I have the tendency to bulldoze people if they are not aggressive talkers. And which is funny because I thought that was going to be an issue in our relationship, but no, Katie will just straight up tell me to shut up. So, which is good. Learning, but I think a lot of times we think that love becomes like this weird combining of perspectives, and I've realized that doesn't work that way. Both people need to have their voice and be heard. Next thing is love doesn't always feel good. I thought going into marriage that we'd get married and be happy. And you are happy, but a lot of times anything that's good hurts and can be hard and difficult. So if you go into any relationship or anything expecting it to be, oh, if I love someone, I'll feel good about it. A lot of times loving someone is more likely to feel bad because you don't get what you thought you were going to get going back to being transactional. But okay. And these are the things I discovered that love is, though I'm bad at doing all these things. Love compromises. So a lot of times, actually all the time, if you ever aren't compromising, you're probably wrong. That's what I've learned very quickly. But love is about taking two perspectives or someone that's completely different than you and accepting them for who they are and then willing to come as you are and then being okay. I think a lot of times it's just about being okay with yourself and with others. Love is selfless. I'm not good at that, but it is a thing. We already kind of covered that. Love is hard and can hurt, as with anything good. I think if you go into any relationship thinking that it will be simple, you're probably not supposed to be in that relationship because most of the time love pushes and challenges you and kind of how I always like to explain it is like I'm constantly getting slapped on the wrist because I'm dumb and then I just need to eventually get to the point where I adjust and rescale to be like, oh, maybe that stupid thing, if someone tells me about it enough, eventually I'll change it. Love heals and mends. So I think it's weird because, like, going back to my parents' relationship, if you went to right where they got divorced, it's like, oh, the world was broken apart and destroyed. But funnily enough, I think that was a divorce of love because it was a point where you just have to accept that they weren't supposed to be together. And now that they can go their own way and grow and mend and heal. But love weathers the storm, which I think it's funny, people always tell us that we've been married for 10 years because we got married during COVID and immediately got slammed into a house together for 4 months. And it was just us and the Grubhub delivery driver every, like, day or so who would be like, hey, and then they'd run away because they didn't want to be near us either. But anyways, and I think it's weird because, like, I wanted to be like, oh, it was hard this last year. But weirdly enough, had I not gotten married before COVID, would have just been at home by myself. And it still would have sucked, but at least it got to suck with someone else. So weirdly enough, if you find the right person, there's someone that I guess is the person that's like, oh, the world sucks, but at least someone's here to suck, and it's going to be horrible together. So we can pull each other through. And then real love breaks you down and builds you up. So there's going to be moments where you are going to feel like the world sucks and everything's going downhill. But if you hold through the storm, you'll come out stronger on the other side. But we can go ahead and go to 1 Peter 4:8. Above all, love each other deeply because love covers over a multitude of sin. So I think the big realization I've had in life is, if you don't know what the Enneagram is, I'm a type 1, which means I'm a perfectionist and like to think the world is supposed to go a certain way, and if it doesn't, I get mad and want to fix it. So, but my resting state is I'm a failure and don't do well because I don't live up to my own standards. And if I'm broken and not doing well, then how can I go over to someone else and be like, oh, you should be perfect, you should be great. So you don't earn any love because you're also broken. So we're all broken, destroyed people, and we should just lead with love and to hopefully build each other and help each other mend. But I wanted to write something that I wrote. This is pre-going into marriage me, but I was trying to like, my big title was what's next? So, because I always like, I don't really know what you do after you get married. What's next? So, first thing I wrote was dispel misconceptions with a bunch of question marks. I'm working on that right now. But anyways, so, but I said, love does not lead to radical immediate change. It's a distance race, not a sprint. It won't be easy. In fact, most days you might feel broken, beaten down, shattered. You will likely have losses. You have to fight every day, and it will be a struggle. But it's good, because at the end of the race, you will be mended, built back up, reinforced. You will gain strength. You won't be alone. You will be saved. You will find joy, hope, and you will be loved. So sorry if I kind of rushed through, but that's just my thing. So if you can go ahead and pray with me. God, I just wanted to today come here and just share a little bit of my story and hopefully help anyone else. But honestly, the world's hard right now, and I feel like we're all kind of getting beaten up and broken down. And we don't always seem to know what we're doing, but we expect everyone else to know what they're doing. And then we immediately throw stones right now. So I just am praying that everyone here can hopefully fight it themselves to maybe lead with love when they first want to go with judgment. And hopefully by leading with love, we can heal our mended and mend our broken and shattered world. Thank you.
Okay, are we on now? All right, got it this time. Excellent. So this morning, so we just heard from someone who it's his first Valentine's Day as a married man, so congratulations, Nick and Katie. This morning, yeah, somebody's clapping for him. First year, the first 10 years. This morning we realized it was our 23rd Valentine's Day together. Now, we had a couple of those where we weren't married yet. So a little bit longer together than Nick and Katie. But it got started as a Sunday morning, which is usually a pretty busy time for a lot of churchgoers, but especially a pastor's family. We're getting ready, and we had a nice hug to celebrate Valentine's Day in the kitchen. Kind of looked over, and I saw some water underneath our refrigerator, and I said, you know what that water's from? No, wonder if somebody spilled something last night or we had some ice melt. Like, eh, hopefully that's it. Well, our freezer had broken. So that romantic way that we got to spend our Valentine's Day, or the beginning of it, was going through our freezer, seeing all the food that we had hoped for, just going down the drain and having to throw them away and cleaning up messes. So romantic, right? That's a romantic way to spend Valentine's Day. And if there's one thing, we have a mantra in our house too. What does mom hate? Kids, what does mom hate? Waste. Mom hates waste. So we began this romantic Valentine's Day with waste, throwing away a bunch of food. It just seemed like this seems like kind of fits with what Nick was going to talk about. So I want to come here and affirm Nick and tie everything into the Sermon on the Mount too. It's what we've been talking about. It's just an amazing sermon that Jesus gave that just has so much application. And within it, one of the things that Jesus says is that the sun rises on the evil and the good. And that God sends rain on the just and the unjust. So whether you're evil or you're good, the sun's going to shine some days. And whether you're just or unjust, the rain is going to come. The freezer is going to break. The little hassles of life are going to come. As Nick and Katie know all too well, as their wedding on March 14th, like almost the last possible day to fit in a wedding before a pandemic came and shut weddings down. But we just don't know. We know that at times it's going to rain, at times the sun's going to shine. There are going to be those good moments and those hard moments, those triumphs and those challenges. And in theory, we can talk about the rain coming. You know, Jesus even ends this Sermon on the Mount with rain coming and a storm. And it all ends up kind of the point, the last illustration that Jesus wanted to hold people with, thinking about the Sermon on the Mount that he laid out so beautifully, was a storm. There's a storm coming. And the rain's going to come, and the floods are going to come, and wind's going to blow and beat against the house. And some houses are going to stand, and some are going to fall. So as we look at that in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus trying to explain how to be able to survive those storms that are going to come, not just for the good, but for the evil. They're coming for all of us. Storms are just a matter of life, problems. The early days of the church emerged in what we sometimes call the Greco-Roman era, and where the part of the world where they lived, Rome was the government that controlled everything, but the Greek culture was really powerful within that world and shaped a lot of the thinking and the way that people lived and expectations towards marriage, towards love, towards relationships. And in the book, The Passion Paradox, authors Brad Stolberg and Steve Magnus wrote about that, the Greek understood, the Greco-Roman world, and the world of Jesus and how people typically understood love and marriage to be. One of the things that they wrote is that people of that culture viewed love as a practice of continually learning about and growing closer to one's partner. It was more of a process of cultivation than an instant connection. Love at first sight. Instead of being preoccupied with searching for the perfect match, for centuries, people worked to develop intimate bonds over time. Then as it traced, that was sort of the expectation. There's not a love at first sight or going out there and finding the perfect match kind of a deal. So right now you might be thinking, poor Jenny, she's married to the Grinch who stole Valentine's Day. He's trying to poo-poo romance and all that kind of stuff. That might be true. You should feel sorry for her. But with kind of as that cultural expectation sort of faded, it gave rise to romanticism. In romanticism, kind of the attitudes began to shift. Emotions became, for a lot of people, the main guide in love. And love became a quest to find an overpowering feeling, which I think is true, too. You know, I think that's one of the beautiful things of falling in love, those powerful, overpowering feelings. An instant magnetism of finding a soulmate, a one and only match. A pastor named Andy Stanley calls this the myth of the right person or the myth of the perfect fit. This idea that there's just one person out there, and until we find that one person, we're going to be unhappy, and then that one person will, as Jerry Maguire said, you complete me. And then once that happens, Nick talked about happily, they all lived happily ever after. You're completed. It's good. And one of the problems that happens is sometimes chemistry issues come up. Sometimes they come up in the first year of marriage, don't they, Nick and Katie? They happen. And then with this mindset, one of the temptations can be to start wondering, well, I got it wrong. I got it wrong. I must have missed out. This was something fascinating. A couple conversations that I had where people were basically coming to me to talk about leaving their wife. And I remember one of them, because there was a theme that was common. And one of those stories was the same kind of theme, but it was, hey, back in the early days, I never even really proposed to her. She thought that I did, and then she told all her friends. And at that point, it was too late. I couldn't break her heart. We never should have gotten married. 30-some-odd years later, never should have. It was a mistake to begin with, and now I'm just now correcting that mistake. And that's, again, one of the things I heard. We never should have done it in the first place. Now, at 30 years in, I think it's a little too late to have that as a reason. But the point is that there's this myth of only the right person, and if something's going wrong, it's time to move on. It's time to throw that person out and find the person who will fit me perfectly and have the perfect marriage where we live happily ever after. Well, within the Sermon on the Mount, another thing that Jesus did is he tried to close a loophole. There were some people in that culture who, as men who had the power, would have basically no reason that they could give, and they could just give a woman a certificate of divorce, and there it was taken care of. It was legal, and everybody could move on, no harm done. Well, Jesus really challenged that way of thinking. And he said, if you've heard that it was said, it was written, Moses wrote this, whoever divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except on the ground of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. And right there, Jesus was really laying into this issue of easy outs and challenging not to leave for any and every reason. Now, he left that provision for immorality, adultery. There's other cases that come up to you. There's abuse and all kinds of things. And I want to say right now, if you are divorced and hearing this, the last thing that I want to do right now is add any more shame. Some of the best ministers of Christ that I know happen to be divorced. Even the person who's credited with founding the Church of God, Daniel S. Warner, was a man who was divorced. So there's divorce is not the point of no return or something that you should feel ashamed about for the rest of your life. So hopefully you don't hear any condemnation. But the point is that with our vows, Jesus said it was real important not to have an easy out. Some of the most memorable vows Jenny and I listened to one time at a wedding that we still talk about basically said, I will stay married to you as long as there's not a better option. Now, not surprisingly, that marriage didn't last long. Yeah, we were shocked. It's true. It's true. She's nodding her head. We heard it, and we thought our mouths dropped. Are you kidding me? And then when we heard they were divorced, we weren't surprised, right? Because that's not a vow. I'm going to stay with you as long as I still think you're the best option. That's not what Jesus said. Jesus took the easy out of divorce. So I think this is leading to, and with what Nick was saying, and sort of the lessons from marriages that fail too, or divorces at the end of like what happened, what went wrong, doing the autopsy, and kind of that autopsy, that realization that instead of just expecting to be loved, I should have tried to love. Jesus said it like this, Matthew 5:46, in the very rich Sermon on the Mount, it's just so full of wisdom that if we hear it and if we practice it, can really help us withstand those storms that come. If you love those who love you, what reward do you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? Jesus challenged his audience, those who followed him, who heard his words, to practice and not just see love as a transaction, where I love you, you love me, and as long as that's the pattern, things are going to be happily ever after. But Jesus challenged for his followers to love even those who didn't love them back, to love enemies, to pray for those who persecute you. That's the way of following Jesus, hearing those words and practicing them, not just loving those, not just greeting the people we like who we're comfortable with, but greeting people maybe we're not comfortable. The way of Christ goes beyond romanticism. And again, I apologize if this isn't as romantic, but the way of Christ gives us, as Nick said, it's real love. It's the love of God, not just a sappy version that is based on myth, but something that can stand, something that can last, something when the wind blows, the rain comes, the floods start to happen, whether that's floods at your house or underneath your refrigerator freezer, those are going to come. And what's going to stand through that? Those people who hear those words and practice. And today, as we're talking about Jesus, we're talking about Christ, as always, our mission is to make disciples who make disciples. So every time is just an invitation to follow Christ and his way. So today, if you want to follow Christ, who demonstrated real love by laying down his life for his friends, I ask you to pray this with me. God, I believe that you so loved the world that you gave your only begotten Son, who gave his life for us, so that we might not perish, but have eternal and abundant life. Thank you for your perfect love that drives out fear and covers over a multitude of sins. Forgive my sin. Help me to repent and follow Jesus, seeking first your kingdom and your righteousness. Give me the Holy Spirit to help me love even those who don't love me. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, at this time, Pastor Brandon and the worship